Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. Uh-huh. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
I got in a huge tax situation in 2008 because my divorce was in 2005 and my accountant had gotten in cahoots. And next thing you know, my accountant died and a girl that worked for him called my lawyer and said, "We have a problem." She had found on the floor all my tax forms for 7 years signed and with the checks stapled to them. So I'm thinking, I done signed and I done stapled the checks. Well, they were cashing the checks, keeping the money, and not turning in the tax form. They took the money out of the account that matched the exact, because I wasn't watching it.
Like, you just see
$600,000
deducted. Yeah.
So I'm thinking it's the check. Little did I know, it was some people taking the money out.
For 7 years?
For 7 years.
How much money did that?
I ended up owing $22
million. Wow.
$22 million with the penalties. So now, wow. Listen to me, man. Me and my wife in 2008, I get the call. And the way I found out was, my lawyer called me and said, "Hey, man, we got a problem. You haven't paid taxes in 7 years. I said, "Man, what are you talking about? I paid taxes. I've been writing the checks and all this here." "Oh, man." He said, "This woman found your taxes in your accountant's office on the floor. Every tax check I had written and every was stapled together for 7 years, quarterly taxes, all of it. So he said, man, that's tax evasion. You can go to prison. And I said, what are we going to do? So he said, hold on, man, let me get some lawyers. So he called up some tax accountants out of Chicago. These boys was the best. And they set me down and they said, man, we got a major problem. He said, I got a friend working at the IRS. Let me take the first year. We took the first year and we sent it in. And he said, man, well, this is an old tax return. He said, man, we got a problem. He got more, but he didn't know it. And so we need a tax payment plan. So the tax payment plan was so astronomical that it was no way I could pay this. So the deal was, if you miss one payment, we come and seize all your assets and you go into jail. That was the deal. So the way I found out I was in real bad trouble was my accountants, my former manager, lawyer, got on a conference call to discuss it. But they sent out an email with the conference call number to my assistant. But it wasn't supposed to go to me. She inadvertently gave it to me. I wasn't even supposed to be on the call. So when I logged in, they were already talking, and I just didn't announce myself. And I heard them say, nobody can live under this amount of stress. There's no way he can pay the back taxes, pay his current taxes, and his living expenses. And I heard a guy on the phone say, what are we going to do when he goes to jail? And I hung the phone up. I went upstairs. I said, Marjorie, Dawson, I said, Marjorie, we got a problem. When I explained it to her, Marjorie started crying. She sat down and cried. My wife cried for 2 straight days. She said, Steve, what you going to do? I said, I'm going to go to work. I took every comedy gig in this country. I signed every contract. I went to work, man. I worked every single Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I went to every venue, the Verizon, Staples Center, MCI, Phillips. I sold out the Fox. I went everywhere. I stayed on the radio, man. I'm coming, sold out. I never missed a payment. And for 4 years in a row, I was sending $650,000 a month to the government. Plus, I had to pay my current taxes.
New taxes.
I couldn't get behind on nothing. And I was living. So I was credit cards, running them up, paying them off. And finally, man, in 2012, I sold 49% of my radio company to iHeart. I got a check, man. I got me a check. And then, so I paid the government completely off to zero. And that was the first time, man, I could breathe. And then the pay-per-view, I said, let me get out of stand-up, because my wife said, Steve, you finna be a major TV star. You're going to have to stop telling the jokes you're telling, because you're going to ruin your career. Because she saw the political correctness turning. And so she said, Steve, you can stop if you want to. I said, baby, I can't ever stop telling jokes. It's who I am. She said, well, okay, but you got to watch what you say. And all of my TV shows are sponsor-driven. The radio is sponsorship-driven. I said, man, let me get out of this, because I need time to go do more TV. And so I did one last comedy show, but I did it on pay-per-view. And little did I know, for $8, you could watch my last show. I had no idea how many people was going to tune in for that. I made a lot of money. It was the biggest single paycheck I ever made. And next thing you know, I was back. Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And Master Ronnie saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Maximizing the gift that God put on the inside of you.
I knew that if God ordered the meal, he was responsible for the bill. And I felt like he was going to pay for it.
If he gave you the vision, he'll provide the provision.
I had $5 left in this plan, and I hadn't even fed my family of eight. And that day, I took that $5 and turned it into $60. I took that $60, put the $5 back that I started with, and turned that into $600 by the end of the week. And that is the same money that I've been flipping for 17 years. I did it with no debt. I did it with no knowledge of the business. I did it with no experience. And for all the people who got something to say about it, I did it with no credit, too. So when they say, ain't no way, there was more to the story than that.
Yeah.
Now, before we hop into today's show, be sure to like, comment, and subscribe. Now, let's jump into the video.
So, Mignon, I didn't know this about your story. And I've known you for years now. And if I am correct, you were a teen mom. When did you have your first?
I had my first baby in 1993. And I had just graduated from high school.
Okay.
But I graduated from high school a year early. So I had gone to college early. Nobody prepared me for what the party was going to be like on an HBCU campus.
Oh, man.
So second semester, I'm bringing home a baby bumblebee.
Are you serious? What HBCU did you go to?
I went to Xavier University.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
And the shocking thing to me, and this is why I love your story, because every time we do something like this, right, something powerful comes from it, and I learn something brand new from you. And you had five kids before 25?
Yeah, I had 5 kids at 21.
21?
Yeah, by the time I was 21, I had 5 children. 3 of them were a wedding present.
Okay.
And then 2 of them I had given birth to, and I had my 6th one at 27.
27?
Yeah.
And didn't drop out of college?
No, it just took me a little bit longer. I even took my children to school with me.
What?
Sometimes they were in class. My baby Dylan, who now runs the business, would sit in the back of my Bible class. He would never be silent. He would never sit still. But when I needed him to go to class, it's like something happened to him, and he would just color until the class was over. Man. Like, God, shut that baby's mouth so I could graduate.
Man. And today, we won't tell the people how old you are. You still look like you're about 30 years old. You know what I'm saying? But today you're running a multi-million-dollar cupcake business. And I don't think it's a cupcake business. I think that you're running a multi-million-dollar ministry. Because when people experience you and your cupcakes and your team, your staff, it's just a different experience, right? And I want to talk about that because some people are experiencing you for the first time here on my show.
Mm-hmm.
And when people experience you, what do they get? I know what I get. Yeah. I get a deeper side of you. But when people experience you for the first time, what will they get? I'm curious.
I'm hoping that they get joy.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's my mission in life. I want to leave everyone experiencing Mignon Francois with joy.
Yeah.
And I feel like there is such a big value for joy in heaven because in the Bible it says those who sow in tears will reap in joy. And when you think about sowing and planting, it takes time for a harvest to grow. And I just think that when that harvest is joy coming out of the things you've gone through, it just lets you know that everything that's happening to you is happening for you.
Yeah.
It's something that you can plant, and something is going to grow out of it. And I believe that's what my whole experience has been about.
Yeah. And so you wrote a book.
I wrote a book.
And this book, I was emotional when I read it. This is not the book. I want it to be fresh. I actually read a PDF version that your team sent over. And it's called Made from Scratch, Finding Success Without a Recipe. And inside of this book, you talk a lot about choosing life. And really, if you just follow you, you're always promoting choose life.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean exactly, choose life?
That's such a good question. I was being awakened at 3:17 every morning, and it was like clockwork. Like, you ever saw that movie Groundhog's Day? I would turn over and see the clock. It would say 3:17. I would just awaken.
Wow.
And so I got up. I would check the house, check the stove, make sure my children were breathing.
Yeah.
And one particular day, I couldn't go back to sleep. And so I turned on the TV. And to me, the best television is either during Black History Month on PBS or fundraising time.
Right.
And there was a guy on TV. He's passed away now. His name was Wayne Dyer. He said, "The morning breeze has something to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Do not go back to sleep." And that sounded crazy to me. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know nothing about no morning breeze talking to me. All I'm listening for is Jesus now.
Yeah.
And so he said it a couple of times. But the third time he said it was, "God is trying to speak to you, and this is the only time you'll listen."
Mm-hmm.
And so while you think that you're getting up to check the stove and the door and stuff, you're actually getting up to spend time with God because this is the only time you're silent enough to listen.
Wow.
And so I was like, okay, well, he can stay on my TV, and I listened more. He then began to explain that it would take me a week now to get out of the bed, now that I knew that that's what I was getting up for.
Mm-hmm.
He was right. But he said, just put your feet on the floor. Eventually, you'll stand up. And that's exactly what happened. I found myself back in the same place where I had started. And underneath the table, I saw my Bible there. Because I was sitting there, okay, God, you want to talk? I don't know what you want to say. Please don't talk. Because if I hear your voice right now, I'm just going to lose it. So don't say nothing. But I do want to hear from you.
Yeah.
And so I saw my Bible, and I decided to open it. And I just let it fall wherever it opened.
Mm-hmm.
It opened up to chapter 3 of a particular book. I believe it was Ephesians 3. And I started at verse 17, and I got my first message from God, and he let me know that he loved me, and he was about to show me that he had plans for me and that I needed to follow them. And so every morning, I would go to chapter 3, verse 17, read through until the end of the chapter or until it didn't make any more sense, and then I'd go on to the next book. I read the whole Bible like that at 3:17 every morning for weeks. When God stopped awakening me on the last day, I fell into Deuteronomy, I believe it was chapter 30, and also in Joshua. And I think that was Joshua 1. It was like the first chapter of Joshua. And God said, I'm sitting before you, life and death, blessings and curses. Choose life. And what it said to me was, I've given you a lot of businesses, Mignon. I have had so many business ideas, and you start them, and you stop them, and you don't follow through. And God said to me, I'm not giving you nothing else.
According to recent stats, only about half of African Americans have some form of estate planning put into place. This includes important documents like your wills, your trust, and your power of attorneys. Additionally, only about 60% of all people have life insurance coverage. But why is it so important for not just black people, but all of us to have these things put into place? You see, life insurance can provide financial protection for your loved ones in the event of your unexpected death. It can help cover funeral and burial expenses, pay off debts, and even your mortgages. But here's what I really want you to consider. It can provide income for your loved ones to build wealth with. You see, estate planning, on the other hand, can help ensure that your assets are distributed according to your wishes after your death, and that your loved ones are taken care of. If you truly love, and I mean this, if you truly, truly love your loved ones, don't leave their financial security at chance. I want you to get life insurance today. You can get a free quote with my friends over at Ethos by visiting anthonyoneal.com/life insurance or by clicking the link in today's show notes. Protect your family's future and give yourself peace of mind. Don't be in heaven and you're full of joy and your family is here on earth struggling and stressed. Get life insurance today with my friends over at Ethos. Hey, now let's get back to today's show. I know it's a good one.
So you better take what we've been talking about these last several weeks. It was everything that I would need to start the cupcake collection, which is the business he gave me at 3:17 in the morning.
Wow.
I would get up, get to my Bible, bring a pen, and I had a journal book. And the journal book was about a 5x7 journal book, something that I could take with me everywhere I go, because a thought only lasts for scientifically 30 seconds unless you ink it in time.
Right.
So you have to write it down in order to not forget it. Because, you know, a lot of times you say to yourself, I'm going to remember that when I get home.
Right.
And you just don't.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
And it's, for me, it's not the same to put it in my phone.
Okay.
So I keep a pen with me and a journal from that day forward. And when God stopped awakening me, I had filled that entire journal book, even to the edges. When you close it,
right.
I had even written on the edges of the book. I keep that in a safe now. When I finished being awakened, it was all of the instructions for what the cupcake collection was going to be. The crazy thing about that was I didn't know how to bake, not even out of a box. But I was listening to this guy on the radio. His name was Dave Ramsey.
That's my guy.
And he was telling people that they could get out of debt by having a bake sale or a garage sale.
Yeah.
And we had sold everything we had to get to Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, okay, God, well, I guess it's going to be a bake sale. And I had these two daughters who were great in the kitchen. And I thought, well, we're going to do your little, you know, you guys are going to bake. What do you think about that? My oldest daughter said, okay. And my younger one was following her sister. Said,
let's do it.
And shortly after we got started, my oldest daughter said, I'm not really interested in your little bakery idea. I'm going back to New Orleans where we're from.
Right.
And so without her, my youngest daughter wasn't interested anymore. So here I am. God has given me all of this stuff to make this business. And he says to me, choose life, because if you don't do this or if you turn from it to the left or to the right, anything that I've taught you to do, I'm going to take everything from you and you'll die. But if you are careful to follow everything that I've said, I will make you prosperous and successful at everything you do. And so I decided that at that point, I understood that God had basically told me he was tired of giving me things. And the thing that I've learned and I want people to know is that I was 31 at the time when this was happening. And I think a lot of times people think it's too late for them. You know, my life hadn't started. We were drowning in debt and brokenness. We were oftentimes living in that house without electricity. And I was 31 years old. Like, you expect your life has started by now. There is a return on the investment that is your life that God is expecting from you. Just like you put your money in the bank, you want a return on your investment.
Yeah.
God wants a return on the investment that he's placed in you, right? Mm-hmm. We're made in his image, so we want things that he wants.
Yeah.
And so God was tired of giving me ideas that I didn't follow through with. And so what he said to me was, choose life. And I understood that choosing life meant not taking another idea and not following it through. And I think a lot of times we think that we're afraid to fail. But really what it was for me was I was afraid to be successful.
Wait, what?
I was afraid to be successful because getting up and being successful means I always have to show up. I don't get to sleep in. That means when I don't feel like it, I still got to come to the table,
That's right?
When I don't feel like it, I still got to produce the product. When I don't feel like it, if I don't feel good, I still got to show up. When I'm going through a divorce and losing everything I have, I still got to show up. And I got to be smiling about it. And I think that's the thing that people really are afraid of. They're not afraid to fail. You're afraid to succeed.
Because of the responsibilities that comes with success.
Yeah.
That is so good. Because you're right.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been afraid to fail. I've been afraid to succeed because I'm scared of what comes with success.
Yeah.
You know, because if you're successful, then you have more people who can see all your flaws.
Yeah.
And then you have people who expect you to show up. And now there's certain things you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious, what helped you get over the fear of success, though?
I was afraid of God.
Ooh.
Like, literally, I knew that I had heard him because I was waking up every day at 3:17. And when I opened my Bible, it just falls into this book, chapter 3. I go down to verse 17 thinking there's something in that 3:17 thing.
Right, right.
And I get my first message. I was afraid that I was going to die.
Yeah.
And I think when God knocks on the door of your heart and he says, I want you to let me in, you better be answering.
Yeah.
And I think that was my thing. I knew that if God ordered the meal, he was responsible for the bill. And I felt like he was going to pay for it.
I like that. If God orders the meal, he going to pay the bill.
Yeah.
You know, as a single man, that kind of, you know, kind of stands out to me a little bit. Someone's like, hey, if I invite you on a date, I'm responsible for the bill.
Yeah. And as a single woman, I expect him to pick up
the bill. Come on, mama. That's real, though.
So God being my father, right, God being the man in my life, I was expecting that if he was inviting me into this relationship to do this thing with him, in collaboration with him, he was going to take care of me.
Because if he don't take care of you, it's not just you looking bad. It's our God looking bad. And he ain't trying to look
He's
bad.
He's not doing that.
Ooh, that's good right there. Now, I like that.
Yeah.
That's good. That's good. If God says it, do it, because he going to take care of the bill.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he has shown me that he would take care of me better than any man ever has.
Ouch.
My earthly father's first responsibility was to show me my heavenly father.
Yeah.
My father was a hardworking man who always was at work. He provided for his children.
Yeah.
I don't think there was anything that we ever really wanted in the earth that we couldn't have. Wow. Like, me coming to this place of understanding took me all the way around the mulberry bush to learn that about my father. But at the end, when he died, I saw his work is being done.
Wow.
And what I was left with was a heavenly father that he represented, who I could go to and say, Daddy, I need you to do this for me. And he does it.
Yeah.
And that's the way my father was.
You know, you guys, Mignon has written a book that I really want you all to get. She's been on my show several times. And I'm pretty sure y'all have seen her go viral several times. The things that she said on my show, from the table to our Black History panel, that has over a million views. And she has a book called Made from Scratch, Finding Success Without a Recipe. It is on pre-order right now if you're watching this in the month of April. But it comes out in the month of May. And I want to encourage you to get this book. I've had the opportunity to read through it, and I fully endorse it. I don't know if it's going to make it on the actual book. But you know what? She is doing some amazing things, some of the best cupcakes in the entire world. I'm just going to be honest with y'all. It is. I call Mignon my spiritual mama, my earthly mothers, my practical birth mother, and my other mother of every Thanksgiving and every Christmas for like the last, I want to say, 5 years
mm-hmm.
now.
Mm-hmm.
They expect her to ship them cupcakes to North Carolina and to California, even to the point to where I forgot last year. And her team called me the day before Christmas Eve. It was the 23rd. Hey, we didn't get your order in. I was like, shoot. And my mom was like, hey, did we order cupcakes? I was like, Mom, I forgot. Christmas Eve cupcakes arrived to Cali and to North Carolina. That's just how good her cupcakes are. And if her cupcakes are that good, it's because of the story and the journey of what she has gone through. And I think the spirit are just on them cupcakes. The spirit of it. And it's like you went from $5 to 5 million plus now in sales. I don't know where you are now in sales.
Mm-hmm.
That was years ago when you were saying 5 million.
Yeah, that was 5 million cupcakes.
Yeah.
That wasn't dollars.
Ooh.
That was 5 million cupcakes.
You took $5 and it turned into 5 million cupcakes.
Yeah.
And I like your tagline, finding success without a recipe.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of people right now are relating to that. Like, how do I find success?
Yeah.
You know, like, how do I do something of substance? How do I know to do what God has given me if I don't know how to?
You said
you didn't know how to do cupcakes.
I didn't know how to bake.
Now you have, I mean, it's not my opinion, y'all. I'm talking about publications. I'm talking about people who actually rate cupcakes
mm-hmm.
said she is number one.
Yeah.
But you didn't have the recipe.
Yeah.
You didn't know how to do it.
No.
Let's talk about that a little bit, because, like, now you have several. You have a couple of stores, several people working for you. I mean, and you have freedom. We're going to talk about that, because you said something to me a while ago about freedom. I just shifted my whole mindset. But how did you go from no recipe to having a strategy and recipe now? Yo, real quick, you guys, are you looking to change your career here in the year of 2023? If so, look no further than Bethel School of Technology, the only Christian online tech boot camp in the world. According to a recent report, Black people make up just about 4% of the U.S. technology workforce. But you see, at Bethel Tech, who I partner with for this year, they believe that all people, including us Black people, should have access to the lucrative and fulfilling opportunities in the tech industry. Now, with their 9-month program, you'll gain the essential skills you need to start a successful career in technology. And let's not forget the earning potential. You see, according to Indeed, the average salary of a software developer in the U.S. is around $103,000. Say what? You know, you can choose from programs like the cybersecurity and UI/UX design and launch your tech career or even a tech business ignited with passion and purpose. So listen, we're going to skip the debt and we're going to invest into yourself for just 9 months that can change the next 9 years of your life. All you got to do is join Bethel Tech today to achieve your career aspirations. Visit AnthonyO'Neill.com
bethel, or click the link in today's show notes today so you can register and start a new journey of your life. Now, you know what? Let's get back to the show, because this is a good one today. Let's keep it above.
Yeah, what I want people to know is that every stupid thing you've ever had to do is taking you from where you are to where you want to be. And so sometimes we think, I'm not supposed to be right here in my life. I should be further.
Yeah.
I should have accomplished something else. And you see all the people around you making it, and you're the only one that hasn't found success yet. And that was my life.
Mm.
And I had gone to Xavier University. I was on scholarship when I got pregnant. That kind of put me in a position where I had to drop out of Xavier and go do something that was going to be quicker.
Okay.
So I decided to go pick up nursing somewhere else.
Okay.
That didn't work out. And then I ended up meeting my husband.
Okay.
Was
the key word.
Yeah.
I want y'all to know y'all saying, husband. Wait. Was husband. That's
yes.
What I'm saying. I got you. I
ended up meeting him, mm-hmm. and then we get married and move to another city. So I just, life picked up.
Okay.
And so, you know, when I was doing that, looking for my place, I found what I was supposed to do. I finally put down on a piece of paper what it was that I wanted to study, and it was always journalism. Mm-hmm. I had this writing fever on the inside of me. So I had gone from being a pre-med student,
okay.
to being a nursing student.
Okay.
I couldn't apply the science to the human body. I was flunking out of my classes. Then I end up dropping out of college to pick it up later to follow my passion, which was writing. And then I also got a degree. So I ended up graduating with a dual degree in mass media and psychology because of all the pre-work that I had done,
right.
as a pre-med student. And then I got, I picked up a passion for photography. Little did I know that God was setting me up for a business. He was going to show me 17 years from then.
Ooh.
And I became my first marketing person.
Okay.
I took all the photography that you used to see on our website.
Yeah.
I took those pictures.
Are you serious?
I was the one who laid out all of the pamphlets and things. I knew how to promote myself because I had gone to school for that. But it was in the kitchen where I was trying to figure out how to do what Dave Ramsey was telling people to do, have a bake sale.
Right.
I called my grandmother on the phone, and I say, Grandma, how do you make cake? And she goes, baby, I don't have a recipe. You know, pinch this much together, you know, get this ingredient. She was talking about ingredients that are not even in the stores anymore, you know, because she's older school,
okay,
right?
Okay.
And so I realized something as I was trying to follow my grandmother's recipe. This is unbalanced. This is an unbalanced chemical equation.
Mm.
Had I been able to balance chemical equations at Xavier, I would be a doctor right now.
Mm.
I couldn't make it work.
Mm.
But it was mixing up the things and putting in the rising ingredients that I realized I could manipulate cake and make it do whatever I wanted it to do. And so I always let people know I'm really not a baker. I'm a scientist.
Ooh.
I'm a food scientist.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it was actually doing chemical reactions in the kitchen 17 years later, trying to make a dollar out of 15 cents.
Yeah.
That all of the things that I had ever done came together as a recipe.
Yeah.
So now I make all of the recipes that are on our lineup.
Yeah.
We've been voted as the best cake in Tennessee.
Yeah.
We've been voted as the best cake in Louisiana.
Yeah.
And I stand as the only business that has that, the only bakery that has that ranking.
Yeah.
In more than one state, because that's the only states where my bakery exists. We also rank as one of the top 10 in the nation. Our food truck was one of the first ones introduced in Nashville.
Yeah.
And still carries a top, ranking.
It's beautiful.
Thank you. We call her Joy.
You're next to a restaurant that I used to go to, and I'll never forget. When I first met you, it was at Dave Ramsey's office.
Mm-hmm.
And you blessed us when I was on staff there. And I'll never forget when you was on the stage, I said, I felt something in my spirit. You're supposed to be connected to her.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, how do I do this? And I'll never forget, I sent the message to you, and I was like, hey, I don't know what it is, but I want to come by the shop and get your story.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since then, I've always called you one of my spiritual mothers.
Yeah.
Because every time I get near you, in the beginning of our show, you said you want people to experience joy.
Mm-hmm.
I've learned so much from you spiritually. I experience the joy. You always have a smile on your face. You're always honest with me. You've told me some hard things about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus. You know what I'm saying? When I was making the transition, you asked me some hard questions,
mm-hmm.
and I was like, this is why. But I got to tell you, that recipe, I ain't never liked vegan stuff.
Yeah.
And then when you made me try that vegan cupcake,
mm-hmm.
I couldn't tell it was vegan.
Yeah. And that's my goal. That's my goal. I want to be the best at what my wheelhouse
yeah.
is. I don't want to do other things. I don't need to be the best at cookies. I make some amazing cookies, but I'm not trying to sell them. I don't need to be the best at donuts. I want to find the best donut shop and
yes.
eat them.
Right?
But I want to be the best at cake because
yes.
that's my lane.
No, you're the best.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
No, I'm serious. You're the best. I mean, I order them.
Yeah.
I haven't even tried no other cupcake in any other city. I'm like, if I want cupcakes, I'm just going to call my people.
Yeah.
Drew, hey, I need some cupcakes. All right, bro. Where
and she's got you. We're beginning to even anticipate. Like you said, I remember going into the bakery, and it was Christmas time, and they were scrambling around. I said, does Anthony have an order? She was like, oh, let me call him right now. You know, I said, just put the order together because you know he is required to send those cupcakes.
I am coming to get them. I'm telling you that right now. You said to me a few years ago, you said one of the best ways of freedom is through ownership and entrepreneurship.
Mm-hmm.
Do you still feel that way?
Yeah. I definitely know that I can own my time. I can own my decisions.
Yeah.
Definitely one of the things I'm also teaching the people who are on my team
mm-hmm.
is about ownership. And you say, why would you say that when they work for you?
Come on, talk.
You know, for me, it's like they are in the business of their own labor.
Yes.
And so I want them to know that even Adam and Eve were required to work
yes.
and to do something.
Yes.
And they can take their labor, and when they see it from that angle, they steward over it
yes.
differently. And I just believe that entrepreneurship is the way to freedom. And when I look back on my history
mm-hmm.
and my ancestry, and the women who came before me, whose names and faces you will never see, names you will never know.
Yeah.
You will experience them because you will know my name. And you will not forget it because I'm going to offer you the best that I have available.
Yeah.
And the thing about it is there might be somebody watching who's a baker and who says, she ain't better than me, you know. That's not, I'm not trying to be in competition with
Come on.
Anybody.
Come on.
I believe that collaboration is the new competition.
Yeah.
And all I'm trying to do is go into those places where we've been historically enslaved and redeem the time.
Come on.
Because my grandmother couldn't have free enterprise. My father was born on a plantation in 1947. My grandmothers couldn't have free enterprise. And so I just want to be able to be the best at living in this sugar business.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Being a descendant of enslaved people
yeah.
from a sugar plantation. And I think that is, that's nothing but God.
You know, here's my problem. Why is it that if we strive to be the best, it means we strive to compete?
Mm-hmm.
I think all of us should strive to be the best.
Yeah.
You should strive to be the best cupcake person, which I believe, in my opinion, you are. But then you watching, you may be in the cupcake business. Strive to be the best.
Yeah.
You know, and then, hey, how do you partner together? How do we come out here and
yeah.
impact people and inspire people? It doesn't have to take away from us striving to be the best. I want to be one of the best podcasters and YouTubers when it comes to bringing people financial freedom. But my brothers, Earn Your Leisure, they're killing the game.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, okay, how do we partner together?
Yeah.
How do we help more people?
Mm-hmm.
But we're both striving to be the best.
Yeah, you look outside of the box and look for ways that you shine, that you can bring some light to the
yeah.
other person, right? And something my five-year-old said, he's 21 now, but, you know, when he was 5 years old,
I had been working every day like it was a job for 2 years to open up this business. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that I think people forget. You see me now, mm-hmm. and you think, oh, she showed up on the scene. I was working 2 years like it was a job before my store ever even opened. This is 17 years of my life that ended me up on this table,
yeah.
even though it's somebody's first, you know, experience with me.
Yeah.
My five-year-old said to me, I was driving down the street and I had been working every day. There were no cupcake shops in Nashville. And we were driving down the street and there's a big sign with give us a swirl. This cupcake place was coming soon.
Yeah.
I slammed on my brakes and started to cry in the middle of Division Street, which is a busy, you know, intersection in Nashville.
It is.
And my five-year-old taps me on the shoulder from the back seat and says, Mommy, there's room. Just because she's first doesn't mean she's going to be the best.
Mm.
And so I wipe my tears, turn the corner, and stop the car again. And I'm just looking at the sign, and I'm crying. He said, Mommy, there's room for cupcakes.
Mm.
I never forgot what that five-year-old said. He's such a good businessman now, uh-huh. as an adult. All of my children are. But what he let me know was, if you were the only cupcake shop, Mama, you can't serve all the people in this one city.
So can't.
So let her do her thing on this side of the city, and you go do your thing on that side of the city, and you both can win.
Yeah.
And that's what I found, that I learned things from watching them come first. It was a blessing that I wasn't first out of the gate, because there were mistakes that, in my opinion, that were being made that I would have never wanted to present my business as. And my son told me there was room. So as other ones began to pop up on every corner, it seemed like, I would welcome them to the neighborhood and to the business. I hope you do well, and cheer them on. I wore a crown for several years as the Sugar Queen. And when, on the last time the competition was run, I gave up the crown. Like, I didn't want to compete because I wanted somebody else to shine.
Yeah.
And the thing about it is, you know, that allowed me to exit the competition on my terms. And from then on, I began to sort of have this light, be this lighthouse in the neighborhood to show other people what good business looks like, and then to let them know what they could do if only they believe.
You know, one of the things I'm really excited about this book is you're very big. You love all people, but you're very big with the and really – I'll say this correctly. I know how to say it. You have a heart for the black community.
Mm-hmm.
And if anyone follows you, you know you're very big on the black community, but you love everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you partner with a publishing company that is very big in the black community as well.
Yeah.
R.H. Boyd, and I know their president very, very well, LaDonna Boyd. What's up, LaDonna? And their story is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, LaDonna is the first female five generations in to a all-black publishing company.
Yeah.
And then you have a heart to where you want to help the black the black community, because your ancestors couldn't do certain things because they were black.
Yeah.
So you partner with a black publishing company to write this book, and it's going to help all people. But I really do believe this book is for that black.
Yeah.
Black individual.
Yeah, I would say that my book doesn't have any color in it as far as skin color goes, but I think that this is our season.
Yes.
I think this is the year of black women being able to come to the table and be successful and make a mark on the world. And the reason why I chose to do this with R.H. Boyd, because there were offers on the table from just about every major publishing company. Three of the largest ones wanted to talk to me about this book and had brought me to the publishing roundtable.
Wow.
But the reason why I did it with her is because we're two women who are the descendants of enslaved people.
Yeah.
Her great-grandfather, I think fourth great-grandfather, opened this printing press when it was illegal for us to read.
Mm.
So that kind of grit and sacrifice is what I wanted to publish my story of being also the descendant of enslaved people.
Yeah.
And I just thought that this was the place and the only place that I could do at least the first one with, because there's more coming out of me. This was just...
this the beginning.
This is just coming out of the block.
What are we going to get inside of this book? Like, what is something that's like, Archie, guys, this, when you read this, this is what you're walking away with.
Yeah. I promised God that if he would make me successful, I would tell anybody who would listen about what they could do if they believe.
Mm.
And I can't get to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So this is for 317 in their morning, wherever they are, to be able to collide with God so that they can see my situation and know that they are not alone. That if they're sitting in a house with no electricity trying to figure out how are you supposed to get your children to school today, because that was me, that they can have someone else who's been there too and let them know that they are not alone.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that they know, even if they've been a stay-at-home mom, which is what I was, and your husband decides that he wants to walk away, that God will be a better man to you than any man could have ever been. I want them to know that people who in the comments say, ain't no way she started this business with $5 and turned it into all that, that miracles are still happening every single day in 2023. God is able to do exceedingly and abundantly above all you can ask or think. And for the naysayers who say that she was being irresponsible having all those children and she couldn't take care of them, I didn't choose this path for myself. This was not what I decided to do and how I decided to be it. But God pulled me through something so that I could help other people out. I believe that we go through things so we can pull other people through them. It wasn't the path that I decided to take, but it was the path or the lesson that was given to me.
Yeah.
And I just think about Jesus kneeling down on the ground when all those men came to accuse this woman, and he begins to write on the ground and says, whichever one of you who doesn't have any sins, you go ahead and cast the first stone to kill her.
Yeah.
And then when she looks around, they've all left because they know they've got skeletons in their closet. And Jesus says, I don't see anybody here that's trying to talk about you. And so that's the thing that I want people to know, that no matter what you don't have, I was sitting in the back of my house with no electricity, trying to do the Dave Ramsey baby steps plan. When my neighbor knocked on the door and made me an offer, I had $5 left in this plan, and I hadn't even fed my family of eight. This was all we were going to have to eat for a week. This $5 was all we were going to have to eat for a week when she asked me to make cupcakes, because they were going crazy in my Germantown, Nashville neighborhood about these cupcakes that I was making in this former crack house that I lived in. And they were calling it lemon crack in my neighborhood.
Lemon.
And so she wanted to pass that out to, you know, all of her friends. And when she knocked on the door, I was like, okay, God, why would you bring this to me when I don't have any money? All I got is $5. My cars had been repossessed, so I don't even have really a way to get to the store. God said, in that moment, I feed birds, and they don't work, and they don't toil. How much more will I provide for you who looks like me? When the lilies of the field and all of their splendor are here today and gone tomorrow, and even Solomon, who was the richest man that ever lived, wasn't clothed like one of these. Just do what I ask you to do, and I will provide. And that day, I took that $5 and turned it into $60. I took that $60, put the $5 back that I started with, and turned that into $600 by the end of the week. And that is the same money that I've been flipping for 17 years. I did it with no debt. I did it with no knowledge of the business. I did it with no experience. And for all the people who got something to say about it, I did it with no credit, too.
So when they say ain't no way, there was more to the story than that.
Yeah.
And I just believe that when God tells you to do something, he's also responsible to say, now do this, now do that. And I followed, and I was obedient. That's what I am. I'm obedient.
Link for the book is in the show description. That's all I'm going to say. You need to get the book, you know, because some of y'all watching right now, you were a team mom. And some of you haven't healed from it because you're listening to what everyone else is saying about you. And, oh, girl, you should have did this. You should have did that. You know, Mignon, you remind me of my good friend Sarah Jake. She was a team mom.
Mm-hmm.
And,
love her.
And look how powerful she is today. Look how powerful you are. Look at what you all have accomplished. And I think what we have to do is start studying people and get around the right people who have made similar mistakes. And we learn from them how to keep on moving. And she won't say it, but she has an amazing team, an amazing staff who love her, who respect her, and she's doing some amazing things. But she started from scratch. Some will say she started from scratch with a mistake. Heck, I remember at one point in time that I thought I was a father. Some people say, Anthony, well, that wasn't wise of you. It probably wasn't. But I can't allow our past. We cannot allow our past to determine where we're going in our future. God determines that. And I want to encourage you all to get the book, Made from Scratch, Finding Success Without a Recipe. The link will be in today's show notes. I promise you I'll get it. But now we're going to have some fun with my mama before she leaves. She didn't even know I was going to ask her this stuff right here. But mama, because you said husband.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh.
You said husband. You know we ain't going to put your age out.
Okay.
There,
yeah.
How is it dating as a older, I'm going to say older, as a wiser, successful woman, I'm curious.
Yeah. Sometimes I wonder, or sometimes I ask myself, why am I in this position that I'm in?
Mm-hmm.
I had done all the things I was supposed to do.
Yeah.
In the book, people are going to learn things about my story that I've never said publicly.
Okay.
Things my children should be broken for that they watched happen.
Mm-hmm.
And when my husband left, God said, give him everything he asked for. I will give it back to you.
Wait. So you ain't get 50% of everything?
I gave him everything he asked for. The only thing I got to do was buy his portion of the house where the bakery is back from him.
Wow.
And everything else that he took, he lost.
Wow.
And God said, I was driving down the street one day, and God said, I still am going to give you the replacement on that husband, too. Mm. I haven't forgotten what I told you, because I know I was made to be a wife.
Right.
But I don't want to, I want to steward well over this single season I'm in.
Absolutely.
I went from my mother's house to my husband's house,
mm-hmm.
to answering to my children. So I went to answer to my parents, to answer to my husband, to answer to my children.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that God is just giving me a time to answer to myself,
ooh,
to get up and decide that I want to go and fly to Chicago and eat dinner and be back home, you know, by breakfast in the morning with myself, not by myself.
Oh, that's so good. Because every time I call you somewhere, I'm like, yeah, she's enjoying this single life right here. Because I'd be like, look, mama, where you at?
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm in Nashville. I'm going to get some cupcakes. Oh, I'm not there. Just go by the shop. Well, where are you? Then one time I asked you, what's his name? She's like, well, I'm talking to someone. I mean, I'm like, oh, well, that's good.
Yeah.
God, don't. Well, lock her down. Lock her down. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I mean, I believe it though.
Mm-hmm.
I just whoever marries you. Wow.
I think I keep hearing things like, now my mother says it like this. I carry myself like a married woman, so people don't know that I'm single.
Yeah.
I think that my husband's gonna know that.
That your husband's gonna know that you're single.
Yeah, I think my husband's gonna know that I'm his wife, and that I've been carrying myself for him.
That's good right there.
Yeah.
So that's God protecting you
yeah.
from, like, the weirdo.
Yeah.
I have been through so many things in my life. I would say that God always sends me women to be on my team and to work with me for all the things that I've been through.
Yeah.
I would say that there has never been a woman on my team that has been through something that I didn't experience.
Wow.
I would say to all the beautiful girls who are watching,
mm-hmm.
That feel like nobody sees them.
Yeah.
And to all the people who feel like they've never been pretty enough,
mm.
that regardless, you don't know the challenge and the journey that those beauty queens have gone on. And people often say, I can't believe that you're single. And I'm like, well, you also can't believe what has happened to me at the hands of men.
Oof. I ain't want to go there on this show because I think I would have been crying. Because
mm-hmm.
when I read that book, you never told me that part of mm-hmm. your story. And I was like, wait, what?
Mm-hmm.
And even my content writer who I had her read the book as well, she was like, did you know? I was like, no, I didn't even know.
Yeah.
And I couldn't even find myself to come and have that conversation with you.
Because mm-hmm.
I was like, you went through that?
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why it's hard for me to have a conversation, because I couldn't tell that you've been through that.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't treat men wrong.
Yeah.
After what you've been through with men,
I should be a bitter
black
woman.
You should be a bitter black woman towards men.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never sensed that with you.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you've connected me with a lot of other men, and they all love you. And mm-hmm. I'm like, wow. And I respectfully say this. There are some ladies who've been cheated on
mm-hmm.
and haven't gone through even a quarter of what you're going through.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't stand us men.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, yeah, Mion, whenever she get married, you're going to be alone.
Yeah. Oh, whoever he is, he's going to be treated like a king.
Oh, my God.
He's not going to know what happened to
him. I'm like, oh, my God.
But I hope that I get the same thing,
you
know, in return. I believe God for that. And I'm excited to be able just to have this conversation for other people who are watching, who are looking at me and saying, but you're successful and you have this and you have that. Like,
but
you know,
been through it.
Yeah, I've been through it. And a lot of people want to have the experiences that I have,
uh-huh.
but you don't want to go through what I've been through to get here.
Man, listen here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't wish what you've been through on any woman.
Mm-hmm.
And literally when I read that part of the book, I just prayed for you.
Yeah.
And I prayed saying, God, thank God for you.
Mm-hmm.
And thank God for him being in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it wasn't for God, we wouldn't be at this table having a conversation.
If it wasn't for God.
And I just think that's the part that I'm like, wow, God, you... Like, he saved your life, not just for you and your kids, but for people like myself.
Yes, I believe that. I believe that that's why God told me to choose life.
Yeah.
Because I need to live for the person who didn't think they could go on anymore.
Mm.
I need to live for the people who are in the valley of decision of saying, this is way too much.
Yeah.
And I want them to know that somebody has it worse than you.
Yeah.
And you need to live so that they can too.
Yeah.
They need to see you living so that they can also live. And that's what I'm here doing. I'm living to show other young people that it doesn't matter if you're 31. I was 33 when this business started. As a matter of fact, it wasn't until I was 33 that I saw myself as beautiful for the very first time.
What?
I talk about that in the book as well, that God, in my name, had said to the world that he wanted them to know that he thought I was beautiful.
Mm.
It's what my name means. But I lived my whole life thinking I was ugly because of the way I had been beaten down, you know, by the circumstances. I know the day that I first found out I was ugly. It was in the first or second grade on the playground in Aurora, Colorado, where we were living. And it was during a game of tag. And so you got to get the book to hear the rest of the story.
We're going to get the book. We're going to get the book. So listen, y'all. We're already over time, but what we're going to do is we're going to put the link to this book in today's show notes. If you're going to get it in the month of April, it's on pre-sale. So go get it. Go ahead and get your copy, and then I promise you it will bless you. It's going to bless you. It's going to challenge you in a good way spiritually. I believe this is going to elevate you and help you elevate yourself to the point of where you need to be at for success. And it's so funny how we have so many ladies, especially like black ladies, come on here and just drop so much gold and wisdom. And so I just want to say thank you. Thank you, Mama. I call her Mama, y'all. I don't have a lot of people, especially ladies in my life, who I allow just to say things to me. And she'll literally text me in the middle of the night and be like, son, and just dump it on me spiritually. And then she don't even know it. I'll be thinking about that for like a whole week.
Mm-hmm.
I'll read over it. I'll study over it. And one of them I gave to my mom,
mm-hmm.
my biological mom, and she said, I love her.
Yeah.
It's the same prayer. It's the same thought. And my mamas, they don't play about who speaks into their son.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's just like, Mion? Oh,
yeah.
We ain't even questioning it.
I was so excited when you took her on a shopping spree and you surprised
yeah.
her. Like, I felt like I was on that with her. I was literally screaming.
My mama loved
you know,
her.
At the phone. I was just so excited.
She thought
about
we
that.
Was going to coach.
Yeah, yeah.
CJ was with me when we did.
Yeah.
Like, literally, that's my mom. Like, yeah. her response, like, Louis? Louis Vuitton? I was like, Mom, get anything out of here, because my mom has been through, respectfully saying this, through hell because
mm-hmm.
of some things that me and my brother put her through.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the least I could have done is give something of that special. And I plan to do more for my parents,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so I had to have you on the show. Because I want my community, my family, my tribe, you all, to get her book. If you love me, I promise you, you're going to love her more. You're going to learn more about her, and I promise you, you'll be blessed by the story. So get the book, and you're going to learn a lot, you know, and especially if some of y'all ladies are feeling like I'm not attractive, especially some ladies are feeling like, hey, I've made some mistakes. I've done some things I should not have done. I promise you, you're going to learn some things from my mama here, and you're going to see where she has come from and how super successful she is, and it's going to bless you. So get the book. We'll drop it in today's show notes. We love you all. Thank you all so much. We'll see you on the next show. Peace out.
By the time you met Blondon, how big were you getting? Like, how much were you buying on a regular basis?
Oh, no, maybe a couple pounds, 16 pounds maybe.
16 pounds.
Yeah, 8 pounds, something like that. Okay. At that time, pounds were going for 35,000 a pound, yeah.
By the time you met Blondon, how much cash did you have?
I don't know. I had a few hundred thousand.
A few hundred thousand. So you weren't a millionaire back then, but you were well off.
I was doing good.
You were doing good.
I was doing pretty good.
So how did the whole Blondon thing come together?
Well, see, we were still getting from the Blondon, but we wasn't going directly to Blondon.
It was a middleman.
It was a middleman. So the only thing happened when we met him personally was...
One in a Million, the history of Madam C.J. Walker and her entrepreneurial legacy. Not even her poor and difficult beginnings stymied Madam Walker's road to greatness. Born December 23, 1867, roughly 2 years after the alleged emancipation of her race, she was an orphan at 7, a wife at 14, a mother at 17, and a widow by 20. The woman who would become known as the first self-made female millionaire and the greatest benefactress of her race, was born the daughter of Owen and Minerva Breedlove, poor ex-slaves living on a cotton farm in Louisiana. They named their special little girl Sarah Breedlove. A washerwoman by trade, at the age of 33 in 1900, Sarah began selling a product door-to-door which she had formulated to remedy her own hair loss. She pinpointed the root of her hair problems, which was the scalp, and created hair care products and a beauty regimen for hair growth and maintenance that focused on the need for a clean and healthy scalp, scalp protection, and scalp stimulation for maximum hair growth. Her first product would eventually be called Madam C.J. Walker's Wonderful Hair Grower, and she boldly and proudly used her own likeness on her jars and her own before and after pictures to demonstrate her product's effectiveness. Per Madam's own words, she abhorred the impression held by some that she claimed to straighten hair. She emphatically stated, "I grow hair," and that there would be no hair-growing business today had I not started it. She described her concept and method of hair growth as beauty culture because she compared growing hair to growing and cultivating garden plants. She then broadened this concept of beauty culture by incorporating the value of cleanliness and professionalism, which emphasized the overall appearance, moral conduct, and character of the Black woman. Black women from all over the country began writing letters to Madam Walker attesting to the benefits of her products. By setting up a special correspondence course of beauty culture in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and then a manufacturing facility in Indiana, and later a beauty college in New York City, Madam was able to further establish and promulgate her program of beauty culture, which trained the Black female in three areas. First, the Black woman was taught the proper presentation of herself. She was to be clean, neat, properly attired, and well-mannered. Second, she was taught how to use Madam's hair care system on customers. And third, she was taught how to sell Madam's hair care products to customers. In so doing, Madam C.J. Walker provided a solution to the root of the Black woman's demise. She raised the Black woman's self-esteem and confidence about her own beauty and intelligence, and she empowered the Black woman economically, thus freeing her from white servitude and male dependency. This accomplishment is even more amazing when put in the context of the time in which these things were done and in the context of Madam's own background. The time, one historian called the nadir, or lowest point in the history of the Black race outside of slavery itself. The blessings of freedom was now marred by the blatant terrorist acts of the Ku Klux Klan and those like-minded individuals working in collusion with them. The harsh realities faced by the vast majority of Blacks living in this era was that the number of lynchings peaked during the early 1900s, as did other backlashes sparked by Reconstruction, such as the burning of Black churches and schools and the establishment of Jim Crow laws. During this dark period, most Black women were either sharecroppers or washerwomen and house servants for whites. Madam Walker was no exception, but she was, however, exceptional. Madam Walker moved her ever-expanding special correspondence course business, founded on her system of beauty culture, to Indianapolis, Indiana, on February 19, 1910. She then purchased and paid for her home, adjoining which was a factory and laboratory, located at 640 North West Street. She endeared herself to the citizens of Indianapolis when she contributed $1,000 to the establishment of the Senate Avenue YMCA. It is reported that she was the only woman to make such a donation. Madam herself, when referring to the YMCA donation, had this to say, quote, "In referring to that $1,000 gift, I don't want you to lay so much stress on it, and do not say that I am the only one. You might say that I was the first and caused others to awaken to the sense of their duty in helping deserving causes for the benefit of the race," end quote. Not long after her move to Indianapolis, Madam Walker also became a member of Bethel AME Church, one of the oldest and most influential churches in the Black community, to which Madam Walker contributed generously. And less than 2 years after moving to Indianapolis, on September 2, 1911, Madam C.J. Walker petitioned the Indiana Secretary of State to become incorporated, and on September 19, 1911, exactly 1 year and 7 months since her arrival in Indianapolis, the Madam C.J. Walker Manufacturing Company of Indiana Incorporated was established, Madam Walker naming herself president and owner of all 1,000 shares of stock. A relentless worker and ingenious marketer and saleswoman, Madam Walker had thought to place her system of hair care products in black colleges all across the United States. She also regularly advertised in black newspapers, and she eventually placed her products in drugstores. As she traveled throughout the country, she wrote letters to her general manager in order to instruct him on how best to run her factory in her absence and how to implement all of her new ideas. However, the Madam Walker agents, Madam's recruited sales force, were her biggest asset. Madam held public meetings in churches, rented lodge halls and other such facilities, and put on demonstrations, including a slide presentation, in order to recruit black women to become Walker agents. Madam Walker taught and trained them in the methods of application and proper use of her hair oils and vegetable shampoo. Eventually, Madam organized a national convention for her Walker agents, giving away prizes and other incentives to motivate and energize her ever-growing troops of Walker agents. Sales generated from Madam Walker's manufacturing company and the hair care products it produced enabled Madam to give birth to yet another legacy, as Madam became known as the greatest benefactress of her race. Through monies earned and derived from Madam's work in the hair-growing business, Madam Walker regularly donated large sums of money to charity and to individuals of her race who were in need. In fact, Madam was so self-sacrificing and freely giving that those closest to her were worried that she would become financially ruined. Desiring all blacks to have decent homes, at times, Madam would assume mortgages of blacks who were financially strapped, allowing them to repay when and how they could. Various schools for blacks and certain social and civic organizations dedicated to the betterment of the black race were also beneficiaries of Madam's philanthropy. Though many have called Madam extravagant, her generosity and passion for her people were Madam's only extravagances. She gave not for self-aggrandizement, but rather to inspire other wealthy blacks to give likewise. Moreover, Madam's giving went well beyond monetary donations. She lent her name and time to worthy causes. She traversed the country, speaking against lynchings, and fought vehemently for the fair treatment of black soldiers who had served in America's military during World War I. Madam C.J. Walker was an ambassador of sorts, a spokesperson for all black-skinned people, a revolutionary, visionary, missionary force. It should therefore be quite obvious that Madam Walker's passing on May 25, 1919, was a tremendous loss to the black race. At that time, Madam had recruited over 25,000 black women from the United States, Central America, and the Caribbean as door-to-door beauty culturists, and was well on her way to Africa. Her net worth was over $1 million, making her the first female, regardless of color, to become a self-made millionaire. She is one of the most successful black entrepreneurs of all time, and one of the first to utilize the method known today as direct sales marketing to distribute her products. She had also managed to build a 32-room mansion in Irvington, New York, called Villa Loaro, which she had desired to be left as a monument to her name and as an example to her race of what hard work and black support of black enterprises could achieve. After Madam's 1919 passing, her hair care manufacturing corporation was used as collateral to secure the finances needed to build what is today known as the Madam Walker Theater Building. Completed in late 1927, the Walker Building Beauty Salon continues to operate there and continues to sell Madam C.J. Walker's original hair care products. Years later, in 1982, the trustees of Madam Walker's trust would deposit a large portion of Madam C.J. Walker Manufacturing Company's business records, historical documents, pictures, and memorabilia with the Indiana Historical Society, who took on the task of painstakingly organizing and preserving the Madam Walker legacy. 74 years after the incorporation of the Madam Walker Company in 1985, the 1,000 shares of capital stock of Madam's corporation were sold to a man named Raymond L. Randolph, making him the first person since Madam Walker herself to own all 1,000 shares of stock in the original Madam Walker Company. A graduate of Attucks High School, Mr. Randolph had never dreamed that he would become the owner and caretaker of this phenomenal legacy. In honor of Madam C.J. Walker, Mr. Randolph placed Madam Walker's image back on the jars of her original hair care products with the words, "Since 1911," placed underneath it. Doing business today as Madam C.J. Walker Enterprises Incorporated, the hair care company founded by Madam C.J. Walker continues to manufacture and sell her original quality products, ensuring that the legacy of this remarkable woman never dies. The Madam Walker Agent Program has been reinstituted and is the main method by which her products are distributed today. On September 24, 2011, Madam C.J. Walker Enterprises sponsored a centennial celebratory walk called Tracing the Footsteps of a Legacy. This event marked the 100th year since the pivotal point in her entrepreneurial legacy when Madam Walker...
Morning people wake up for peace and quiet. McDonald's breakfast people, we wake up for the sweet rush of getting that warm, delicious breakfast right before it ends.
Crush your morning goals with a steak, egg, and cheese bagel or any breakfast sandwich and snag another one for just a buck with the buy one, get one deal. Only in the McDonald's app. Limited time only at participating McDonald's. Valid once per day. Must opt into rewards.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
At Jiffy Lube, we car about cars. In fact, we're kinda obsessed. That's why we've been taking car of business with quick quality oil changes and service for over 40 years. And with things like our Carful Vehicle Review, where our experts will check, fill, clean, and inspect your vehicle, you'll know we'll car for your car like we car for our own. Jiffy Lube. Car more.
Visit JiffyLubeDC.com to find a Jiffy Lube service center near you.